Episode 241.
This is the mechanics of learning. These are how we learn and the techniques that build on that and standing up on it to get on that pathway of realizing your full potential. All of my classes, the underlying thing is to plant those seeds of self-awareness, learning awareness, which are two of the seeds that you were asking me about earlier.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 241 with George Menchu from AES Wave. You're about to experience a great lesson in learning from a very passionate teacher. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, here's a shout-out to Michael Ellibrock, Rick Clotier, and Brandon Steckler for the recent Facebook likes, and Joseph Henmuller and David Eschbach for their LinkedIn connections. I love connections on all my social posts. Find them easily at remarkableresults.biz/social. If you'd like to get on board with the Insider Newsletter, get up-to-the-minute information on every new podcast and Town Hall Academy, then text the word REMARKABLE to 33444. Yep, get out your phone, hit the text, type in 33444, and let the content say REMARKABLE. And then you'll get some follow-up prompts, and you'll get registered and connected to become an insider. Hey, find the show notes for this interview with George Menchu at remarkableresults.biz/E241. Many know George Menchu, and if you don't, meet the president of AES Wave from Fresno, California. George is all about learning and teaching. He's an entrepreneur, instructor, and has found over the years a powerful method to engage his students to be better learners. If you're mobile and you can't write down the talking points, go to the show notes page when you get a chance. Now, George has worked with many colleagues throughout the industry like Pete Myers, Scott Brown, and John Thornton, and he's taught at Vision High Tech Training and Expo and Automechanica, among other venues. We have an inspiring interview, and here's just a couple of gems. George shares the four pathways to learning. George says everyone knows how to learn. The difference, those who are in control of the process do not struggle to learn. He also asks, as a professional technician, how valuable are you to a shop? The Google search technician is easy to replace. He also says that we need to look at the type of training that's coming out of schools today. George is a member of the Vision Educators Think Tank and a former NACAT Foundation member. Now listen to another inspiring interview from the Remarkable Results Radio podcast. Now here's George Menchu. A warm welcome to George Menchu, the owner of AES Wave and a renowned industry trainer. So happy to have you here, George. Welcome.
Carm, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you know, AES Wave, really cool company. How'd you start the business?
The seeds for the business started when I was very young, but I won't get into that.
I love those stories that you tell when you were young, though, I have to tell you.
Oh, man.
Maybe another time, yes.
Yeah, well, one thing I will tell you about what led to AES. It's been a string of events that have happened throughout my life. And it's been very odd because the key points that happened along the way, starting really in the summer after sixth grade, I still remember these events. I knew that they were important events as they happened. You know, in one case, it was something as simple as listening to the radio, and Dr. Joyce Brothers came on, and she made a point about overachievers, how they make a list of all these things that they want to accomplish during the day, and then they don't accomplish it, and they get mad at themselves. And she made the point that they're teaching themselves to fail by having this huge list. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she said was, train yourself to be successful. And her point was, start all over, make one thing on the list, get it done, and tap yourself on the back and say, look, I did it. And then you do two things and you slowly progress up. And by doing that, you learn what you can really handle and have a real expectation. The big point underneath that was train yourself to be successful instead of overwhelming yourself and not accomplishing your goals and being mad at yourself about it. So anyway, you know, just a bunch of little things had added up, and that was one of them, one of many. Finally, what had happened as I was working on cars, I wanted to be an inventor. And I knew that the way to do that would be to learn electronics, or at least that was going to be my pathway for doing that. So I went to school at the University of Radio Shack and the bookstore and the library.
Okay.
I studied electronics, and I just loved it because with a lot of electronics, there is a lot of logic to it, especially when you get into microprocessors and digital logic gates and things like that. So it tapped into my desire to master the mechanics of the way things work. In the course of learning electronics, I started using a lab scope. And so, you know, I had already spent many years working on the wiring on cars and really enjoyed it. So they just all came together one day and I said, well, you know, I'm surprised everyone's not using a lab scope. And I made a test lead kit and wrote a book. And that's what started AES.
Wow. Did that Joyce Brothers quote have anything to do with how you feel about being a power learner?
Yeah, probably so, because in all the years that I've done training, I tried to study the interactions I've had with people that have come to my classes. But along with that, I've always studied the challenges that I've gone through in learning, where my weaknesses and strengths are, what I was good at, what I wasn't good at, and how you overcome these obstacles. So a lot of the things that I've done, you know, I just have a high school education. So I'm very much self-taught. And even back in school, I had this thing about not listening to the teachers. It just...
What do you mean? I mean, you mean that you just didn't like that part?
No, I wanted to figure it out for myself.
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me, right?
That's right. Give me the starting point and the direction. Let me see if I can figure it out for myself.
Wait a minute. Are you a guy who buys the toy for the kid and never reads the instruction?
Well, that does happen a lot. And I have paid the price for not reading the instructions many times. But that's part of the adventure. You know, and on a serious note, when I first started training it, I was teaching about lab scopes and waveforms. And I saw that the big challenge was the learning. How do we, you know, what are the roadblocks and how do we get over them? So I had started studying about learning, just like I started studying about electronics. And over time, I realized something as I was reading all of this high-tech learning stuff with all the big words in the PhD type of language, I just felt that there was this disconnect. Even though I'm sure everything that I was reading was like the pinnacle of studying about learning, it wasn't, you know, at the street level. It wasn't at the shop floor level. It's about the individual and it's about what they're facing with. And you've got to be able to speak their language,
right,
and their style to reach them. Learning is about reaching people. So that's one thing. The more I read, the more I said, you know what's the shame about reading all this? Is it because it denies me the opportunity to discover it for myself. And so it was, you know, I'm going to stop reading this stuff.
Wow.
And I'm going to try and learn it, not through their experiences, but through my own. So, you know, it's a personal thing.
Yeah, you know, that segues so perfectly into the three pathways of learning that you have. It's just, I think it's a perfect segue. Can you talk to us about that?
When it comes to learning, there's many ways to break it up. There's like three different levels of learning, or maybe four different levels of learning. So, for example, there's a mechanics of learning.
Mm-hmm.
The learning that takes place that we have no control over, it's just the way it works. And then the next level is the learning that each of us individually have because of our makeup. For example, somebody brain might be better wired to do mathematics than someone else's.
Right.
You know, people talk about learning styles. And then there's another level up, and that's what I call environmental. And environmental learning has to do with the environment you grow up in. So, for example, if you're in an environment where they never teach you to read, you don't know how to read. So that is a learning weakness you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one is specialty learning for a special task. So those are four levels of learning. So all the years that I've done classes, my focus has been on those who are struggling the hardest. Because on the other side of the spectrum, you get guys that are good. Well, they're already on their learning pathway. They're already realizing their full potential. They're on their way to doing that. So if I look at the guys who are struggling the most and say, how do I get them on that pathway to reaching their full potential?
Got it.
And so that's where these four steps came from. And what I've learned for those who are having the most trouble, the main problem is understanding the mechanics of learning. So in all the years that I've done classes and we've done exercises and I looked, tried to analyze what the problems were, it wasn't because they were hands-on learners. It wasn't because they were visual learners. That's almost never, ever the problem. The problem goes into this simple idea. Those who are successful, let me say it this way. Everybody knows how to learn. Everybody does. The difference between those who struggle and those who are not struggling is the guys who are not struggling are in more control of the process. And a lot of them don't even have to think about it. It's like when you develop a skill, you force yourself to learn it. It becomes a habit, and then it becomes an innate part of who you are. It just develops, and you don't even have to think about it, and they're just good at what they do. The guys and gals who are struggling, they know how to learn, but they're not as in control of the process. And what level of process is it? And it's, again, it's not because of a learning style.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Do you actually put products in the hands of the technicians?
Yes, absolutely. Anytime there's new product introduced, perhaps a new problem solver or a new technology, we keep that stuff on the van just because their local parts supplier may not have it available. And we think it's important to show them what's coming. And then seeing the part is really, especially with the new OEX, seeing the part and touching the part is something that changes perspective rather than just a piece of paper with a picture of the part.
Okay, so you put an OEX pad into the hand of a technician, and you've done this, I'm sure, hundreds of times. What do you see on their face when they see it?
You can tell they get it. You know, in our industry, there's technology that we use all the time that you look at and you're like, that just doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to take your word that it works. You put an OEX brake pad in somebody's hand, and I just ask the question, why does this look so weird? And they're like, I bet it's to make it cool. They get it as soon as you put it in their hand.
So technicians holding your product and listening to your presentation, do you ever see the light bulbs go up? They raise their hand and says, boy, I've got a great idea for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not only does that happen every time I'm with a group of guys, I solicit ideas. I'm like, listen, a lot of the stuff that I've shared with you originated in a bay somewhere where the technician said, you know what, if you could do this, it would be really cool. And so the stuff that I get, I send up, you know, to our engineering team and say, hey, could we do something like this? And there's things in the works, and there's some things that came out recently that originated in, hey, if you could do this, it would be helpful. Because at the end of the day, you know, I think Federal Mogul is known in every line to be a problem solver, and not just solving a problem, but making an installation easier as well.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
Going into class, being in front of that class with all of this knowledge, are you then looking for maximum knowledge transfer based on all of these variables? How is it that you get everyone that's at a different phase to learn as much as they can?
Well, it's kind of difficult in a certain respect, because if you get the guys who are really high end, and I like to focus on the guys who are having difficulties. And so how do you balance out the needs? Well, first, you got to just have interesting content, something unique. So the expert guys are going to absorb it quickly, but hopefully they can appreciate it. But the other thing is that with the expert guys, let me show you how much you really know, and let me help you become aware of what you're doing so you can even be better at what you do. So that's kind of the strategy that I take. So now let's go back to the beginning, guys, that I have found that is the number one thing that holds them back is, again, they're all learners. They know how to learn, but they are just not aware and in charge of the process. So the goal is to help them develop that awareness and become in charge of the process. And so which of those four levels that I talked about earlier, if it's an environmental thing where they just went to school and they didn't work on reading, well, you've got to go learn how to read in this industry. There's no question about it. You got to be a fairly good reader. So that's an environmental thing. But still underneath that, the number one thing is I know how to learn, but I'm not aware of it. So it becomes an issue of mastering the mechanics of how learning works. And that is the easiest part of learning to learn. But the thing is we go through school, but it's a byproduct instead of it being the product that is center stage and say, hey, this is the mechanics of learning. These are how we learn and the techniques that build on that and standing up on it to get on that pathway of realizing your full potential. So all of my classes, the underlying thing is to plant those seeds of self-awareness, learning awareness, which are two of the seeds that you were asking me about earlier.
Yeah.
That's what it stands on. I'm going to become a master of mechanics of learning. So I've got an ultimate foundation that works solid as a rock. I've got many different examples that I've used over the years. One of them that I like a lot, and I first presented it at IETN conference. I think it was in Detroit. But the mechanics of learning, so there's a seed to learning that you can't change. Everyone does it the same way. And so here's the question I'll ask in my class. Everybody in the class typically knows how to work a crossword puzzle. I'll challenge everybody in my class, and it's just rhetorical. They don't have to do this, but I give them a minute to think about this. If you were tasked with writing an outline of how to solve a crossword puzzle, because someone who's going to walk in that door in 2 minutes has never seen one, but you're going to give them an outline step by step of how to solve that crossword puzzle, what would you write? Well, then I let a minute go by and we sit and we just review it, because I don't have to read what anyone says, because regardless of the words that they use, they're all going to end up meaning the same thing. First, you can look at a crossword puzzle and you're going to take an overview of it, you know, just to orient yourself. And then when you start trying to solve it, you cannot solve it by looking at what you don't know. You have got to look for what you do know. And then when you fill up the crossword puzzle, you know, the horizontal and vertical cells of the crossword puzzle are like your brain cells waiting to be filled up. And you can almost make the perfect analogy to a lab scope. So look at this. I take a lab scope and I hook it up to a circuit. The waveform does not give me the answer. It's up to me to be able to read the waveform, just like the question of the crossword puzzle. And if I can answer the question, I might do the first vertical one down. Well, that vertical one down gives me clues for the horizontal ones that intersect it. And so the crossword puzzle, I look for what I know, gives me clues for what I kind of know. And then if I can answer those, I now get to focus on what I don't know. And I have the most clues and all my variables all lined up because I can focus. And that's how it's done. And that is the analogy of the mechanics of the way we learn. You just can't do it any other way.
You know, George, it sounds like the perfect analogy of what a diagnostician does.
It is. You know, it's just the way we all learn. You know, it's, years ago, I read this Life magazine and it said in this thing about, you and I talked about this before, but it talked about the way babies learn. And at the time, they were saying scientists say they learn by making relationships to what they already know. There has to be a connection. And if you think about it, if you turn your awareness on and you start thinking about when you're trying to learn something, you can look at what you don't know all day and it ain't going to change. What you know about what you don't know is you don't know it and you've got to set it aside. And what do you look for? You look for the things you know. And here's an example from my own experience. I worked on Datsuns, Toyotas, and Volkswagens. One day the boss's best friend brought in this 8-cylinder brand new car and had all the fancy cowling. And I looked, I opened up the hood and I, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I felt overwhelmed. Well, I just naturally did the right thing. I went out and got what I did know, and that was the manual that they brought with them. I opened it up, and there's a wiring diagram, and I know electronics. And so I started with what I know. Oh, here's the throttle position sensor. I went and found it. I referenced everything in that diagram, which looked 100% familiar, and then I looked for it on the car. And within a half an hour, I had a very good overall understanding, and it was no longer a stranger that overwhelmed me like it was when I opened the hood. So again, cross your puzzle, that scenario is exactly the same. So let's go back to what we were talking about. This goes into that idea of self-awareness, because by being aware of these things, I am teaching myself to be in control of the learning process instead of it being a byproduct. So if I can master the mechanics and I could start seeing them playing out when I'm not doing it right, like I'm getting tunnel vision, I can teach myself to self-awareness. I'm getting tunnel vision. That doesn't work. I know that I don't know this, so I'm going to set it aside. And what am I going to do? I'm going to go look for what I know. And that's what it's all based on right there, pretty much.
Wow. I'm motivated. I'm inspired. Well, thanks for that. You know, we started out the episode about AES Wave and your company. And what do you love to do at work every day? What's your favorite task?
Probably the thing that I like the most is when everybody's gone and I'm working here late at night and I get to focus on something.
I knew you would say that. Let me go figure it out, right?
Yeah, let me go figure it out. That's the joy that I've always had. Mm. You know, Carlos, who runs the day-to-day operation, he does an excellent job. And he takes a lot of running a business off my back. You know, we got a lot of things going on here. So the office end of it is very intense.
What a great guy. I mean, you know, I almost look at you as a pure entrepreneur. You know, I want to be in the lab, you know, and I want to be experimenting and learning and doing these things. And your brother Carlos runs the business for you. And I think, I don't know if you could, you probably find a better partner like that to help you.
Oh, yeah, it's been wonderful. And you know, we kind of come from the same philosophy of doing business. You know, I like to say that, unfortunately, I say that there's a lot of people in the industry that I see more often than I do my neighbors. Over the last 25 years, you know, had the great opportunity to build a lot of great relationships. And so for me, it's kind of like a family thing.
Yeah.
Not just with my brother here. My mom actually works for us. She helps us find all the, she checks all the credit cards and does all sorts of things for us. So it is kind of a family business.
It is a family, yeah.
The whole industry is the family. We're in this together. I mean, I had, my hair was not gray when I started, and now it is. Well, it's been gray for a long time.
You and I are going to compare. You're much whiter than me. I'm hanging in there. I mean, we're looking at each other. Yeah, we're looking at our white hair here.
Yeah. Well, I blame it on my mom. She was gray in her 30s, and so was I. But, you know, this is it. Work is a big part of our lives. And so I look at it that way, you know, and I'll take this opportunity to say one of the greatest things that I love about the business are those relationships. You know, when I started my business, I started out with very little money and I was working day and night to the point of absolute exhaustion. It was a lot of the people around me, from my neighbors at the time to people that didn't even live in Fresno, of course, customers that just helped, you know, keep me going and staying focused and had me covered. And wow. So I always say I got a lot to be thankful for.
I also hear that you're a very generous person too. Hey, you know, you mentioned just a moment ago about the industry and relationships. What are your general thoughts on where we're headed in the industry as a whole?
In general, the industry by itself isn't going to change very much. You know, I've been involved in a lot of discussions about, you know, the education side through the Vision Educator Think Tank. And mm-hmm. In past, I was on NACAT Foundation, and I've always had an interest in educators, and I'm a big fan of educators, just huge fan.
Yeah.
So these things always interest me from that perspective. But in the overall industry, it's kind of difficult because we have cars that are old, barely hanging onto a thread, to brand new cars. And we also have shops that are maybe shouldn't be in business that are, and high-end shops, there's always going to be this full spectrum. So I don't know how that's going to change. But, you know, when you think about the importance of transportation to the fundamental fabric of society and the importance of it just for safety, you would think that something has to be done. There has to be very strict minimum qualifications. So it's a very difficult situation. And when we start seeing these cars driving themselves, it's just going to get worse. But it's such a big industry, there might not be anything we could ever do.
It's too big to move.
It almost is too big to move.
Yeah.
What do you, you know, if we did move, it would almost like be saying half of the shops out there are out of business. You know, how can you do that? Because a lot of them could be good people who are trying to do the best they can. So then the only thing that I can see that we can do is just try to get people more and more involved into, you know, the core of the industry that is always trying to move forward and build things up. So I think with the idea that self-driving cars are going to come into the equation, I mean, the roads are going to be extremely dangerous.
Well,
you know, because that's going to be an experiment for years that we're going to be suffering the consequences of potentially.
Do you see all the technology changes, the ADAS systems in cars today? Do you see that as an opportunity for shops that want to stay on the cutting edge of learning and education?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when fuel injection came on the cars, it helped separate those who try and those who are just kind of getting their jobs done. And the separation is continuing to grow. And of course, the older cars are eventually going to fade away. And we're going to end up with these, you know, rolling computers. And that's going to change the industry in itself. But at the same time, with all the free information that's up on the internet, the do-it-yourself market is growing back up again. Because you can go on to Google, I've got this problem, I've got this code, what do I do? And there's an answer for you.
Silver bullets, they're called. Yes.
Silver bullets are called, but it takes away the value for those technicians who had to learn that information the hard way, who made the investment, in a lot of times right out of their own pocket. So, I mean, this is such a spider web of issues here. It is hard to see where we're going to end up. At the same time, for example, when I was starting AES, I look at the industry and, oh, my goodness, look at all these opportunities for the motivated. I don't have to have a PhD. I don't have to, you know, go to school for 10 years to become a doctor like you do to become a doctor. I can just sit here in the middle of nowhere, the little small town USA, and come up with something creative that could be a product, you know, start my own business. Look at all the guys that are doing programming right now.
Yep.
What a great opportunity that's been. You know, it's a perfect relationship. Here's a shop that doesn't get into the high tech. Here's a mobile tech that can fill that need for them. So, you know, it's been a great opportunity for those who are willing to take the chance and look around and try and find them.
Is the web making experts out of techs and giving them maybe false direction? You know, I don't know how to say it any different or any better versus, you know, the education that you and your peers are doing in the industry. Is can someone survive, I guess, on the web and be semi-successful?
Yeah, well, let's look at it this way. So when I look at things like that, I like to sit back at things and look at the mechanics and see how they work. If you're a business owner, what's your first priority? Make money so you can keep the shop open and feed your family. So here's what I lived through with people that I was selling to and interacting with when I started at Yes. There's a step one when things went to fuel injection, and it's based on this comment. I have to make a living. Just tell me what I need to know to get this car fixed. Okay? And you can't blame somebody for being in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make a living, and
right.
You've got to get the car fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, it would go to the next step. Okay, tell me what I know to do the test. And then it became, oh, help me understand the test. And then it became, help me understand the technology. And so there's this progression of becoming self-reliant. Now let's fast forward. We have this crutch of Google and information available. It allows him to be successful immediately. So the underlying thing that we have to accomplish as an industry is inspire people to want to improve themselves. We don't, then they become what I call a go-no-go gauge. They are reliant on the information of everyone else. What does it come down to? Inspiring people to want to improve themselves.
Yeah.
Making it about them. Karm, it's all about you, man. Do you want to be the guy who's easy to replace? Do you want to be the go-no-go gauge? And when it doesn't work, you're sitting there scratching your head and people get tired of helping you? Or you want to be the guy that's going through all these Google searches and you've gone through five of them and it doesn't work? So this is the only way I can think of changing things. It's getting that message directly to you and convincing you that it is in your best interest to improve yourself so you become the valued person in the shop. Not the guy who is easy to replace, and the Google expert is easy to replace.
George, I loved what you just said. Thank you. I'm moved by it. Wow. Hey, you're a fan of educators. You just told us that. What's your take on the incoming students and, you know, the tech shortage issue?
That is a great question. All right. So this year I did a seminar for Fresno City College and I did one for Bakersfield City College. Every time I go into a city college and do something like that, I walk out just absolutely floored at the quality of student. It is just amazing. Their depth of knowledge, their eagerness to learn, their willingness to speak up in a class, and their willingness to question. And when I hear someone say, you know, the quality of the student's not there, from just those two examples, which it's probably reflective of a lot of what's going on, there is some great quality in there. And so I wonder if sometimes the folks that say, oh, you know, we need higher quality students, I wonder if they're looking at it differently. So they might be coming in looking at it, well, I'm a shop owner and I lost one of my guys and I need to replace him. Well, I can't go get him at the school because they're not at that level yet. But if you go sit in a class where it's interactive, like mine's very interactive, we get a lot of discussions and, you know, I can see the excitement on their face. Yeah. I can hear their reactions to questions and the way they're solving problems. It's inspiring. So if the classes at these colleges are full coming in and we're losing these talented folks to other industries, then what's the problem that needs to be focused on first? That is keeping them in the industry instead of, oh, we need more to come in. So I wonder, is the industry forgetting to focus on the most important problem here? And yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
No, you know the answer to it. I think we need another hour to talk about it.
Yeah, don't get me started, right?
That's kind of where I was going, yes.
Yeah.
I had breakfast this morning with a local shop owner group, and this was the exact discussion. And some of the guys that own their shops that used to work at dealerships have, you know, seen the recruitment out of the colleges go to the dealerships, and 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 months later, they're no longer at the dealership. And there's a lot of factors.
Right.
There's a, you know, excitement and allure, you know, to go to work for a big company like that. But so many of this one guy's friends were, you know, working for fleets, the electric company, they just moved on to other things. And either the independent world that, you know, we are so much a part of isn't recruiting. The pay may not necessarily be there. The apprentice programs aren't strong enough when they really get into commerce. Boy, and you know what? You've been on these education think tanks and these discussions ad nauseum talking about the same thing. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we read about it, the more people listen to podcasts about it, we may slowly start seeing some of those changes happen. And I think we just need to run better businesses, too.
But, you know, as far as those changes are concerned, again, I think that what's missing is a good layout of underlying mechanics. Here's the process of them coming into the pipeline, coming out at high school, coming out at the end of college or city college, and here are the steps. Where are the problems? And let's identify and see what we can do. Now, you talked a little bit about the shop owners versus a dealer. Well, you know, a dealer probably has quite a bit of turnover, and they have jobs for low-end guys that they can slowly work up in. Independent shops, it's a little bit different. It's probably very easy for them to find someone to bring to come in, and they can teach how to change oil and, you know, pull tires on and off and do all those basic things. They don't need someone going to school necessarily to do that. Okay. But the shop owner, you know, if you take a medium-sized shop owner, maybe has three or four techs. Well, if he loses a tech that is performing and making money for them, they need someone who can step into that place. So there is a gap between what can come out of school and what they are. And everyone says, well, you have to grow your own. Well, anybody who's a small business owner knows that sometimes there's just not enough time in the day, and it's difficult to take on more of a load. So you have to go find people that fill the gap that is open. And again, a shop owner, mid-sized business, they might not have very many openings for someone that just got out of school. And that's just the reality. Maybe what needs to be looked at is the type of training that is coming out of the school. So if I have, I'm teaching someone that's going to graduate from college that has this wide variety of training. What do you say I go out into my community and find out what their needs are? Don't expect them to come to you. You got to go to them. They're busy trying to make a living, paying the bills and spending time with their family. They might not have time to get on your advisory council. So here's the one that from my experience. On the street that I worked on, there were guys that were experts in American cars. I worked on Datsuns, Toyotas, Volkswagens, and I knew very little about American cars. They always needed my help, though. Why did they need my help? Because I knew electronics, I knew wiring diagrams, and I knew how to use the test equipment. And so when you put us together, we were a very valuable team. So now, same thing would apply. If I can take a student and show them how to color code a wiring diagram, understand the voltage conditions and then the voltage test and how to walk through the diagram and use the color coding as a step for analysis of the strategies of the diagram. And they can walk into a shop that has guys who just never picked up a lab scope. They know how to use a multimeter, but they don't really understand it. You get that young student to come in there and fill in that gap. He doesn't have to be an expert on cars, but he has an immediate value. So, you know, we talk about these big standards that we want to meet, but let's look at the realities. You've got to find value that's immediate so you can bridge that gap between, oh, I've got general understanding coming out of school, but I have a shop where I need to make money now. Yeah. You've got to bring me value immediately.
I can listen to you all day. I know why your classes fill up wherever you go. A final question. Do you ever hear back from your students that loved your fundamental way to teach them how to learn? Have they ever said, hey, George, you've changed me?
I have heard that. And
is that their big reward?
That is a huge reward. For me, that's what it's all about. I mean, because my class is a combination of my experiences with everyone who's come to the class. But it's also, it's about me. Because I'm talking about the way that I think and I do things. So it's very, very personal. I mean, it's extremely personal.
Sure.
So when someone gives me feedback and it works for them and it's opened doors for them, and you can lay that foundation of understanding and show them a formula to build from, that's so important because that first step is always hardest. A lot of times when I get feedback, it's, you know, heartfelt in a way. Because if you're one of those who doesn't feel they can make that first step and then you help them get over it, you know, it's pretty solid.
Good for you. I would love to have you come back someday if you're willing and just ask you a couple of questions and let you go because you're so wise. And, you know, you've basically taught me that they didn't teach us how to learn in school. No matter if it was, you know, secondary, post-secondary. And I think you're opening up the minds of everyone that there's a way to do it. And if you want to get good at what you do.
Let me throw just two things out at you.
Please, yes.
I look at my son, he's in sixth grade right now. They are teaching him how to learn. But in a way, it's a byproduct of learning things. So instead of putting math first, let's put, here's the mechanics of learning. And we're going to use math to show you how it works. So here's an example. Ohm's law, let's say 12 volt equals 6 times X. Well, you can look at X all day, can't you? And you're never going to figure it out. You've got to rearrange it and you got to look at what you know, and then you got to play out the process and it will lead you to what X means. And so developing that awareness. See, now when you talk about it that way, that's the fundamental pattern of learning that I talked about with the crossword puzzle.
And who said we didn't need algebra?
Oh my God. It's, you know what? math and mechanics is just, I probably didn't appreciate it back then, but I sure do now. You know, that's one of the greatest gifts of automotive repair for me is, living mechanics, taking things apart, putting them together, and then being able to take that experience and relate it to everything around me. Because again, if you can master the parts and pieces, how they go together, how they make structures and how they play out a process, that is what mastering a system is about. You're an expert in automotive repair. You are an expert in what I just said. But when you say it the way I just said it, it now becomes a fundamental template that fits into everything. And so for me, that's like building an engine. It's like taking off an alternator, putting it back on. It's like learning a computer strategy. And you really learn this when I wrote my software program, the AES waveform analysis, the first one. It was all about mechanics. And anyway, wow. It's been pretty exciting. But can I tell you one more thing?
Sure.
Earlier, you asked me about teachers.
Yeah.
And I've always been a big fan of teachers. And for those who are not around a lot of educators, I encourage them to do it. Because one of the things I used to see, like, for example, on IETN and, of course, going to different events and talking to teachers and the things that they do, there are so many talented teachers out there. It's just absolutely incredible. And for me, it was like a bunch of unsung heroes. I mean, they're there and, maybe they know the people in their community, but I think on a big part of the industry, they were just kind of hidden to the depth of thought and the motivation and the hard work that they put in.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. On my homepage, on the website, you can actually click on a little cool box educators series. I actually have split all the episodes into different really great talking series, and one of them is on educators. And anyone who's I've ever interviewed, and I have interviewed a bunch, especially some educators of the year, both at secondary and post-secondary, and those are great stories to hear, the evolution and the passion from educators. Thank you, George, so much. I learned so much. You will come back?
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you. Wasn't that a powerful walkthrough of a learning strategy? Well, I thank George Menchu for sharing his great wisdom. Hey, aftermarket professionals, thank you so much for listening. Now find additional show notes on George Menchu at remarkableresults.biz/E241. Keep in the know on all episodes through connection on my social platforms and via the Insider Newsletter. Find everything you need at remarkableresults.biz/social. I really do appreciate your engagement with the Remarkable Results radio interviews. You are using the podcast for its intended purpose, and I would ask that you help spread the word. Tell a friend, send an email, and share this episode. I'm grateful and thankful for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.